Richard Fitzwilliams on the line. Good afternoon, Richard. How are you?
Very well indeed. And following with great interest the opening of the Cannes Film Festival.
Yes.
It's very glamorous with five women on the nine-person jury headed by Cate Blanchett, and also the interesting battles between Thierry Frémaux, who organises it, and the first of the critics who were denied early screenings of premieres, and also the controversy surrounding Cannes and Netflix.
Yeah, and no selfies on the red carpet either.
Very strict on that. Yes, it's be interesting to see how it develops over the period of the festival, because no selfies, as you say, and also critic screenings altered that to will be a little controversial, and banning Netflix. Well, see whether it works.
Well, we've talked about that before, of course. I wonder how long they can ignore it, because it's a little bit like saying, McDonald's can't win an award for fast food. It's a little bit, because they're so prominent now, aren't they?
Well, this is the case. I agree with what they're trying to do, but whether they can actually succeed in doing it, I don't know. We had an interesting premiere of the Asghar Farhadi movie, Everybody Knows, with Javier Bardem. Interesting, again, to see whether this as a thriller of a sort actually comes off. The reviews have been somewhat mixed. But can a surprise. I mean, there was always the famous case when the film about Princess Grace with Nicole Kidman opened, which was an absolute turkey. So you never know what you get, and that's part of the fun of it.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope there's no turkeys today, but you never know. On the rush up to, a week and a couple of days till the royal wedding. How long is it now? Yeah, about a week and a half, is it? The 19th of May.
No, it's 9 days, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, the press are salivating. There's enormous interest worldwide. I mean, something like 5,000 journalists are going to be over covering it. Batteries of cameras being set up in Windsor. I mean, you couldn't make it up. I am deluged and absolutely fascinating. Of course, I did a recce at Windsor, and you could went to the Chapel Royal where they'd be married, and 10 kings buried there. The chapel is the chapel of the Order of the Knights of the Garter, which is our oldest of chivalry, and that was founded by Edward III, and he founded the remarkable St. George's Hall, where they will be have their reception. And it so happens that descent has been traced from Meghan Markle on her father's side to Edward III. So all sorts of interesting things. I mean, in the 19th century, really? one of her paternal family, worked as a housekeeper, Mary Bird, in the royal household. Too, in 1856 they found this. All sorts of interesting details from every angle, and also new news, the fact that one of Diana's sisters...
How funny. Amazing. Are you there, Richard? He disappeared on me, and I heard him go halfway through. You there, Richard? Are you there? Hello? We seem to have lost him. We'll try and get him back. Richard Fitzwilliams. Let's try and get him back on the air. Slight problem there. But I was quite enjoying that, because I was about to ask him about whether the fact that it seems that this wedding is bigger than maybe others of years gone by for maybe royals that aren't so close to the throne. I'm doing what's called multitasking, which men aren't very good at doing, apparently. So let's see what we've got. Live on the air, folks. Here we go. Richard, are you there? Hello.
Yes, I am. Oh, it's unfortunate. Sorry, I did disappear.
Sorry about that. No, I was just about to ask you. It appears to me that it seems to be more focused on this wedding than there would have been maybe a few decades ago for a royal in Harry's position.
Well, you know, he is the world's most eligible bachelor, but yes, you're right. The reason you're right is, of course, it's our first American princess. I mean, every station in America is fascinated by it. And also, you know, she's divorcee, she's biracial, and she's a big star. You know, in, I don't know if you remember the cameo role she gave in Horrible Bosses, but in Suits, of course, she's very big. And, you know, the red carpet also nearly 3 million, 2.7 million, followers on Instagram.
Wow. Richard,
so,
we've got a call on line. Just say, hopefully it's about this. Good afternoon, you're live on TRE. Hello.
Oh, hello there. It's John from Benidorm. I've just been listening to the programme about the royal marriage and the royal family.
Yes.
But what people seem to forget is the Queen shouldn't be the Queen.
Okay.
The reason is that to succeed to the crown, there's two things you need to do. One is be legitimately born, the other is to have a bloodline to the throne.
Mm.
The problem is that Edward IV was neither legitimately born or had a bloodline to the throne. Therefore, every single monarch from Edward IV onwards is illegitimate and shouldn't be there.
I did see a documentary on this once, actually, yeah. And actually, there's a royal, actually, somebody who should be king living in Australia right
now.
That's
right.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Michael Hastings.
Yes, yes.
Who is a peer of the realm, and he is should be King Michael I. And so all this that we're talking about,
well,
are we going to put it right?
Well, unfortunately, I think it will stay as it is. I think whatever we say. Thank you for your call anyway. Really appreciate it. I've seen the documentary on that. It's fascinating, really. So yeah. Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now. There we go. Richard, you probably heard that before, haven't you?
I've heard reports, but, I mean, we are where we are, and I hope you'll be watching the wedding like hundreds of millions of others. I mean, the interesting thing is that Windsor is personification of Englishness, and in 1917, during the First World War, the royal family changed their name of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha to Windsor.
Mm.
And when Meghan marries, I mean, it will be with the Archbishop of Canterbury. The Church of England, until quite recently, wouldn't marry divorced couples in churches,
Yeah.
The spouses, one of them, was still living. They've changed that. And this will be a very happy occasion. It'll also show how far the royal family have come, how much more inclusive it is.
Okay, well, Richard, no doubt we'll be talking about that for the next few weeks. And next week, I'm not actually with you, I'm away, but no doubt we'll be reviewing it afterwards as well. Let's have a quick look at some of the films. And I'm hoping you got this name correct here, Richard. We got 7 days in Entebbe, and then Wendy wasn't sure whether it was just called Entebbe, but you can tell me more.
Well, Entebbe, it's a movie that it was made, in fact, as an adventure-type film about, we know that the Israeli raid, when there was a hijacking of an Air France jet en route from Tel Aviv to Paris in 1976, and it was diverted to Kampala, Uganda, where Idi Amin was in charge, and an Israeli raid rescued those in peril. I mean, this was made into a movie previously, but this is quite a thought-provoking film because it's directed by Jose Padilla, and the purpose of the movie is to give you an insight into the mind of the terrorist and also show how each atrocity in the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis perpetuates a cycle of violence which is still unresolved. And to emphasize this, we have throughout the film the use of a chair dance. It's from a work by an Israeli choreographer, and the dancers shed their traditional Jewish garb and abandon preconceptions. So the whole idea of this is it's intended to symbolize the change needed to find peace.
Yeah.
Some may find this a device that works. Some may find it a device that doesn't work. It's certainly unusual. And it's what shows that this is a very different film from the type of, as I say, some will expect just a movie which depicts the actual raid. The hijackings carried out by two members of the Palestinian Popular Front are two German left-wing radicals, and the film focuses on them.
Yeah, can I just jump in and say one of the interesting lines in the film, I think that kind of highlights what you just said, was when somebody says, well, what do you think it looks like when some Germans hijack an airplane full of Jews? And and he said, well, I'm not bothered what it looks like, it's what it means to me. What I'm doing it for, and I suppose that kind of highlights what the film's trying to bring across, whether you agree with it or not. It's another matter, of course.
Yes, no, of course. And one of the Palestinians says to Bouce, who's played by Daniel Brühl, you are here because you hate your country. I am here because I love mine. And this is the dilemma of the terrorists. Brigitte Kuhlmann's played by Rosamund Pike. Also a very good performance because both of them are very ruthless and very alienated individuals. And as character studies, that works. And it's also got a lot of screen time devoted to the clash between Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, played by Leo Ashkenazi, and his Defense Minister Shimon Peres, played by Eddie Marsan. And neither of them wants to shoulder the blame if the raid fails, and they plot against each other. And also there's a touch of the bizarre, of course, Idi Amin. They're played by Nonso Anosi. Do you remember Forrest Whitaker in the role?
No, I didn't see the original, but the guy in this new one I recognise from a few TV series I've seen. I've seen him in quite a few things before.
He's perfectly adequate, but Forrest Whitaker was really scary. Yeah. And, I mean, Whitaker was superb, in an award-winning role. I mean, this is an unusual movie. It's unusual enough to be compelling, but there's a subplot which links an Israeli soldier with one of the dancers. I mentioned this dance throughout the movie is supposed to be symbolic of the cauldron of turmoil of the area. I thought it was rather good. I thought it was an unusual film, and I think it was well acted.
Okay, ratings out of 5 then, Richard, please, for that.
Well, it gets 3.5.
Okay, good stuff. So a worthy watch then, and certainly not your run-of-the-mill film anyway, so that brings across a point. Now, another film I haven't seen, so forgive me for this, but I am... it was long before my time, actually, but that's no excuse. The film called If, of course, it's 50-year anniversary, and a film really which, from what I've seen of the clips of it, really tells its that kind of late 60s, 70s feel of what's going on in culture. So tell us more on that one, Richard.
Well, this was absolutely fascinating because I saw it many times when it came out in 1969, and it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and it celebrates 50 years, and it just so happened also to coincide with the Paris student uprising. It's set in a public school in Cheltenham and considered one of the greatest British films, directed by Lindsay Anderson, who uses the brutal and ruthless and hierarchical public school as a microcosm whereby we see society's greater ills, and we also see rebels led by Mick Travis. This was the movie together with A Clockwork Orange, do you remember, that made Malcolm McDowell?
Yes, yeah. That's what when I was watching the clips, I was thinking Clockwork Orange, definitely there.
Definitely also three rebels and breaking down a system at the school, which is a collection of top actors, Peter Jeffrey as the headmaster, Arthur Lowe as the housemaster, Mona Washbourne as Mrs. Kemp, and Anthony Nichols as General Denson, and a collection of young actors, including, and it was David Wood who played Johnny, one of the rebels, who introduced the 50th anniversary. There was so it was very nice. We had a message from Malcolm McDowell. He was filming in America. The movie became a classic. It also, its music, the Missa Luba, a Congolese mass, became extremely popular, and it was a sublime piece of poetry. It was a fascinating mix of fantasy, reality, and it was a mixture of both, but it was so beautifully put together. Argument still rages over whether the scenes in black, shot in black and white, were intended or, as it has been some claim, because the budget or the film's budget ran out. One thing was the case, which I was very amused, was he confirmed that Lindsay Anderson had handed a totally bogus script to the headmaster of Cheltenham College in order to be able to film, and when the college saw the actual film, the outrage was hilarious.
And it was quite risque, I suppose, as well for its time. And I mean, you're talking about lots of censorship in the UK, far more than there is now even.
Oh yes, this is absolutely the case. There's a film in a cafe, a fantasy scene, a sex scene between Malcolm McDowell and Christine Noonan, who subsequently tragically died. Her career never took off, which was a shame. But also, there were full frontal nude scenes, which was completely unique in films in those days. And it had some tussles with the censors in various countries, including South Africa, which is where I saw it first. But the theme of rebellion against oppression mirrored in the Paris riots, and also the hierarchical society in Britain in the 60s was, of course, under siege. Mm. The movie just mirrored a mood perfectly.
Is this going to be released at the cinema again or anything like that? What are they doing for the 50th anniversary?
They had a single screening, which David Wood, one of the actors playing the rebel, Johnny, gave this talk. They haven't actually got a nationwide release, but I just wanted to mark what I thought was one of the most seminal films.
Okay, lovely stuff. Thank you, Richard, as always. Now, ratings out of 5 on that one, as a film.
Oh, 5. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, and what are we looking at next? Well, next week I'm not with you, but you will be here with Giles, so what films are you going to be looking at?
Well, I'm hoping to see Solo, a Star Wars story by then, and also a movie somewhat controversial about Jean-Luc Godard, Redoubtable.
Oh, okay. I'll have to listen in on that one. So, Richard, as always, if anybody wants to find you online, how can they do that?
It's www.richardfitzwilliams.com and on Twitter at @rfitzwilliams.
And are you on Sky News or CNN next few days on the build-up to what's going on?
Oh, my heavens, it's been extraordinary. France 24 and the Austrian television the last couple of days, and tomorrow Japanese NHL television and 2 more French stations, BBC World have booked me. I'll be doing quite a lot. I've done some pieces for CNN already, and I'll be doing it live for Yahoo.com on a 5-hour special. So there's lots to enjoy, and not to mention the radio stations. This is the tip of the iceberg because, of course, as I say, the interest is universal. It's an avalanche.
Just remember, Talk Radio Europe's your favourite, Richard. That's all you need to remember. Thank you very much for coming on, as always. And we'll speak again soon.
Certainly will.
Cheers, Richard. Bye-bye.